Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming Unitarian Universalist congregation. My name is Mike Fitzer, and I serve as the Director of Music here at FPC. Childcare is available during this service in the nursery, in the lower level of Fellowship Hall, which can be reached by walking through either level of the Connector Building and then taking the elevator or stairs to the lower level. If the need arises any time during the service, please feel free to take your child there where he or she will be well cared for. If you're not sure where to go, one of our ushers can help to direct you. Everyone is invited to coffee hour in Fellowship Hall after the service. To get there, please exit the church through this door to my left and follow the Connector Building and again go down the stairs or take the elevator. If this is your first time with us, we're very happy to have you here. Please sign one of our guest books, which are located in the vestibule at the front entrance of the church, at the new main entrance, or at the visitor's table during coffee hour, so we can put you on our email list. Oh, and I'd like to introduce our visiting minister this morning, Laura Randall. She'll tell you a little bit about herself, but the Reverend Laura Randall is the Legacy Campaign Director at our Unitarian Universalist Association, and she's also affiliate community minister at the Unitarian Universalist Area Church in Sherborne, Massachusetts, and we're very excited to have her here with us today.
Good morning. It is said that ministers are here to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. I say that we're all afflicted and we are all comfortable. May our time together this morning be a comfort and a confrontation. May we here find peace in times of tumult. May we here find tumult in times of peace. May we find calm in times of restlessness. May we here allow restlessness evolve into action. Let this be a place you consider what you've never before considered. Let this be a place you imagine for yourself something new and unthinkable. May this hour bring dreams of new ways of being into the world. Come, let us worship together. And I now invite the Cote Sinclair family to light our chalice. The flaming chalice was first used by the Unitarian Service Committee as a symbol of life-saving refuge for people fleeing persecution in Europe. As we light this chalice, may we invoke the love that called people to put their lives at risk to save others. May we be vessels of life-saving welcome. And I invite us all to now rise in body or in spirit as we sing together hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us.
Love will guide us, peace has tried us, hope inside us will lead the way on the road from greed to giving. Love will guide us through the hard night. If you cannot angels, if you cannot speak before thousands, you can give from deep within you. You can change the world with your love. Love will guide us, peace has tried us. Hope inside us will lead the way on the road from greed to giving. Love will guide us through the hard night.
Let us now say together our covenant.
Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another.
From all that dwell below the skies, let words of love and peace arise. Let joyful songs of praise be sung through every land by every tongue.
Good morning. So, Reverend Laura is going to speak about walking to trouble. I think that's the right. Yeah, I have that right. Just want to make sure. And I have been dying to share this book for years. It is my favorite children's story ever, and it's called Tony's Hard Work Day. And the reason that I like it so much is because you meet kids that are like under the age of five, and they truly think they can do anything. They do. They think that if they have a trouble, not every kid, but most kids will think, like, I can do it, I can do it. So this book is about Tony, who meets some problems and just keeps getting the message that he can't do things, and he decides he's going to face his troubles and just take on the world on his own. One time, Tony's mother and father bought a house in the country. It was a small house and very broken, but Tony's father liked it because there was green grass everywhere and sweet water and good air that you could breathe all day long. "Smell the air," Tony's father would say, and everyone would stop what they were doing and breathe in and out. There was a lot of work to do in the country, painting work and cleaning work and hanging up curtains and taking down spider webs and hammering and nailing and things like that. "Let me help," Tony would say to his father. "Let me hammer." "No, you are too small," Tony's father would answer. "You would hit yourself with a hammer, and then you would cry, and we would all have to stop working and hold you for a little while. So it's not a good idea." "Let me help," Tony said to his mother, who was sewing curtains. "Not right now," said Tony's mother, "because I'm making tiny, tiny stitches with my needle, and your hands aren't quite smart enough to do such small work, and you would stick yourself, and a little blood would come, and you hate blood, and then you would cry, and we would all have to stop working and rock you and sing to you. So that's not a good idea." "Let me help," Tony said to his big brother Matthew, who was painting his room with a big brush. "No," said Matthew, "you don't know how to paint, and you'll make a mess on the floor, and then I will get angry and yell at you, and you will cry and tell Mommy, and she will ask you what's wrong, and you will tell her that I was mean to you, and she will tell Daddy, and he will yell at me. So that's not a good idea." "Let me help," Tony said to his other big brother, Adam, who was chopping wood. "No," said Adam, "this axe is very heavy, and you won't be able to lift it very high, and it will drop fast and fall on your foot, and you will yell and jump around for 10 minutes, so that's not a good idea." "But what will be a good idea for me?" Tony asked his brother. "A good idea for you is to go and play someplace where you don't bother anybody," said Adam. So do you think he should just go play? He's been told he can't do anything. You can't sew, you can't nail, you can't hammer. Well, Tony decides, as he takes a walk in the woods, that he will build his own house. So Tony dug a hole in the ground, then he filled up the hole with pebbles and stones and smoothed it down carefully until it was flat. "That will be the floor," said Tony. Now, I know you can't really see the pictures from there, but if you could, it's like a house-sized hole that Tony just was able to build just like that and dig. Then Tony made an axe out of a sharp rock and a stick. "I will chop down some trees for the walls of my house," he said. And he chopped down 100 trees and cut the tops so they turned into logs. Then he cut little pieces from the ends so they would fit together, and he rolled them over to the stone floor. By the way, he also put a stone floor in. Then he put one log on top of another to make the walls of his house. But pretty soon the walls were so high that he couldn't reach the top, so he went home to get a ladder. "Now I can reach the top," he said. Tony finished putting up the walls of his house and then cut down 100 more trees to make the roof. He put one tree right next to another on top of the house, And when that was done, he went into the woods and got some vines. He pulled the leaves from the vines until he had a long rope, and then he tied all the trees on the roof together. Then he made some mud with water and dirt and smeared it all over the roof so the rain wouldn't get in. Then he chopped big square holes in the walls with his axe. "Those will be my windows," said Tony. Then when he was done with the windows, he went home for lunch, so he did all this just in the morning. He was very hungry from all that work, so he ate 5 sandwiches and drank 7 glasses of milk. "What have you been doing all morning?" said Tony's father. "Playing a game on the hill," said Tony, and he went back to work. He got 1,000 rocks and piled them up on top of each other inside the house, and when he came to the ceiling, he cut a hole so a chimney could go through. "This will be my fireplace," said Tony. Then he put mud between all the rocks so the fireplace would stay up forever. Then he got some of the tall, tall grass that grew in the meadow, and he wove a big rug for his house so his feet would be warm when his shoes were off. Then he took a nap, because he was tired from all that hard work. When he woke up, the whole family was standing over him. "We couldn't find you anywhere," said his mother. "I was sleeping," said Tony. "Who made this beautiful house?" asked Tony's father. "I did," said Tony, "and it was very hard work. It took me the whole day." "It looks like a good place to live," said Adam. "Can we stay in this house with you?" asked Matthew. "Sure," said Tony. So they moved all the beds and dishes into the house Tony built. And they were so happy there that they stayed in the country forever. And whenever there was any work to do, they would say to Tony, "Can I help?" And Tony would always say, what do you think he said? Yes. And I love this book because I love that it just reminds me of, like I said, that optimism that children have, that they can do anything. And if we took that same optimism in our lives and just thought, okay, I have this problem, I have this trouble, what can I do? Instead of running away from it, we thought, hey, I can build a house like Tony. So that's my message for all ages.
And from this time of listening and hearing, let me invite you now, in these next few moments, to find a center in the midst of a turning world and the many pressures of life. Let us enter into a spirit of meditation, prayer, and reflection. Spirit of life and love, we are here because we believe what we do matters. We are here because we believe how we live our life matters. That with every act of kindness or meanness, courage or fear, love or hate, we are weaving the fabric of the universe that holds all of us. We are here because we need encouragement, because we need strength. Because so often we get distracted. We get in a rush. We don't think. We choose the easy way, when the harder path is what our spirit truly longs for. We are here because none of us is perfect. But together we inspire one another to try again, to take another step. We are here because we've felt the stirrings of love and grace in our hearts and our hands, and we crave more of that for ourselves, but not just for ourselves, for everyone. We are here because how we live matters. Let us be held together in several moments of silence. Blessed be, and amen. We will now gratefully receive the morning offering. Our plate sharing this month is for Mercy Home Orphanage, and you can read more about this very worthy cause in your order of service.
It's been a long, hard time. It's gonna be a long, steep climb. But no one's gonna change our minds about what we gotta do. When the road gets rough, everybody's saying just give it up. All of our friends, sweet love's gonna carry us through. We don't have the money, but we got the will. We got voices talking the truth that can never be stilled. But they're gonna threaten. You know they have killed to get their way. But this movement we are building will not go away. Oh, it's been a long, hard time. It's gonna be a long, steep climb. But no one's gonna change our minds about what we gotta do. And when the road gets rough, everybody's saying just give it up. All of our friends, sweet love's gonna carry us through. Now we're gonna argue, we don't always agree. But we can't let anger blind us to all we can be. 'Cause we need the laughter, and we need the tears to wash us clean. We need siblings in spirit beside us to follow the dream. Oh, it's been a long, hard time. It's gonna be a long, steep climb. But no one's gonna change our minds about what we gotta do. And when the road gets rough, everybody's saying just give it up. All of our friends, sweet love's gonna carry us through.
We give thanks for the gifts and the givers, for the blessings of sunlight and warm community and beautiful music. May we use what has been given wisely for this family and for all the families of the earth. Our first reading this morning is from Unitarian Universalist theologian and minister Rebecca Ann Parker. It is her poem, Choose to Bless the World. Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question. What will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with an intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love. Protesting, urging, insisting, that which is sacred will not be defiled. Those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude to search for the sources of power and grace, native wisdom, healing and liberation. More, the choice will draw you into community. The endeavor shared, the heritage passed on, the companionship of struggle, the importance of keeping faith, the life of ritual and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of the earth, the chorus of life welcoming you. None of us can save the world alone. Together, that is another possibility waiting. Our second reading today is from the Reverend Victoria Safford, from her book, The Sacraments of Word and Celebration. She writes, "On those occasions when the weight of the world is closing in and the evidence against hope mounts as I read the news, when I start confusing cynicism with pragmatism and begin muttering miserable, unrepeatable things at the radio, when I sigh, I'm so tired, I'm so discouraged, at those times, my partner, Ross, will say, in the kindest way possible, 'What kind of self-indulgent whining is this? What kind of entitled grandiosity of privilege is this to think that you or I or anyone has the right to sever the bright thread of hope, the tradition of dedication to the common good and faith in people's power to imagine great change, to imagine and take great risks? There is a beautiful, proud history of work for human rights and freedom, for social change and peace and protection of the earth. This is the story in which we choose to stand. This is not the story of oppression and imperialism and militarism and corporate greed and plunder, but that alternate story, equally true, of those who lived their lives and gave their lives for love, for the difficult and truly patriotic ideal, liberty and justice for all. This is an ideal that is gradually gathering everyone up, women and slaves and indigenous people, children and elders and immigrants, those fighting for human rights and civil rights, for public schools and pluralism, every person, gay and straight, who would sit at the welcome table. We're only here to pass this story on. All you have to do is keep the fire burning for a little while, stoke it with your life, don't allow it to go out, and pass it on. You have no right to put it out." Here ends our readings. And I invite you now to rise in body or in spirit as we sing together hymn number 159, "This Is My Song."
This is my song, O God of all the nations, a song of peace for lands afar and high. This is my home, the country where my heart is. Here are my my holy shrine. What other hearts in other lands are beating with hopes and dreams as true and high as mine? My country's skies are than the ocean, and sunlight beams on clover leaf and pine. What are the
Be seated. It is good to be with you today. Thank you for having me. And I hope you all had an enjoyable Thanksgiving holiday. But perhaps, like me, a cloud seemed to hang over your festivities. Something more ominous than the expected stress that accompanies the frenzy of preparations or the mundane tensions of family drama. This year, I felt caught between two realities that are not sitting together very well. On one hand, I was surrounded by my closest family, finding comfort in each other's company and in way too much food. And on the other hand, how on earth can I enjoy pie and a parade when our government may be taken over by white supremacists set to dismantle the basic human rights of everyone I hold dear? E.B. White wrote, "It's hard to know when to respond to the seductiveness of the world and when to respond to its challenge. If the world were merely seductive, that would be easy. If it were merely challenging, that would be no problem. But I arise in the morning torn between the desire to improve the world and the desire to enjoy the world. And this makes it hard to plan the day." So I've been thinking a lot about what to do at times like these. What do we, as people of faith, as Unitarian Universalists, do when the world seems unbelievably unjust, cruel, and in a great deal of trouble? How are we called to respond to the world's brokenness? How do we rise to the challenge before us of saving the world without forgetting to savor it as well? Each year at the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association, a speaker from outside of our Unitarian Universalist tradition is invited to offer their perspective and wisdom on the world. This Ware Lecture is a tradition going back to 1922, and previous Ware lecturers have included the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Kurt Vonnegut, and Karen Armstrong. In 2014, the Ware lecturer was Sister Simone Campbell, a Catholic nun and a member of the Sisters of Social Service community who's been on the national stage often lately, starting with her 2012 Nuns on a Bus tour, which went across America striving to highlight the blight of income inequality in our country and support for the Affordable Care Act. More recently, Sister Simone has been working for a comprehensive and just immigration reform alongside the Reverend William Barber and the repairers of the breach. Actually, Sister Simone and her community first came to national attention when the Vatican started cracking down on American nuns for promoting feminist themes and remaining silent on the right to life from conception. It was this attempt at reining in of the social justice work of she and her sisters that they had been doing for decades that inspired Sister Simone to create the Nuns on a Bus tour, bringing her message of inclusion and the right to life that includes a right to health care. That's the thing about trying to censor or end social justice work. It often just has the opposite effect. Sister Simone titled her Ware lecture, "Walking Toward Trouble," and she quickly explained why. She said, "When I was on the bus on the first trip, the Bill Moyers program, actually it was Judith Moyers, Bill's wife, who saw that it was going to be something. So she insisted that Bill send a full-time photographer, videographer on the bus. His name was Andy Fredericks. And he was interviewing me, and we were almost done with the trip, and he asked me this question. He said, 'Well, Sister Simone, it seems like whenever there's trouble, you walk towards it. Most people run away.' And I got to thinking about it, and I realized that all of our spiritual leaders, when there are broken hearts or pain in the world, they've walked towards it. They walk towards pain in order to embrace, touch, and heal. Sister Simone, a Roman Catholic nun, spoke these words before thousands of Unitarian Universalists because in us, she recognized spiritual allies in the work of social justice. In us, she recognized people willing to walk towards trouble, too. There's a long tradition of walking towards trouble in Unitarian Universalist history. We come from a long line of religious innovators and heretics who repeatedly challenged the status quo, sometimes at risk of their own lives. In our ranks, we have Francis David, who preached for religious tolerance in 16th century Europe. We have the abolitionists Thomas Starr King and Theodore Parker. It was Parker who first said, "The arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." We have Susan B. Anthony and Clara Barton. We have James Reeb, the Unitarian Universalist minister, and Viola Luuzzo, the Michigan housewife, both of whom responded to Dr. King's call to Selma in 1965 and were murdered by white supremacists. And among all these famous names are thousands upon thousands of Unitarian Universalists who work for justice alongside of them. In 1921, the Universalist minister, the Reverend Louis Fisher, said, "Universalists are often asked where they stand. The only true answer is, we do not stand at all, we move." As a progressive, inclusive faith, the Reverend Fisher is right. We are called to move, and that often means moving towards trouble. Sometimes this comes in the form of marching. During these last few years alone, Unitarian Universalists have showed up by the thousands to march for the earth during the People's Climate March in New York City, to march for voting rights in North Carolina, and to show solidarity with the indigenous people protecting their sacred land and right to clean water in Standing Rock, North Dakota. And these massive efforts, combined with untold numbers of Unitarian Universalists who hold vigils week after week, promoting racial justice across our country. Because we know that whether there's 10 of us or 10,000, we will continue to teach, sing, and move on behalf of justice. And sometimes we don't have to move all that far because the trouble comes to us. One Sunday, at one of our sister congregations in New Orleans, protesters from an organization called Operation Save America disrupted the worship service by shouting hateful rhetoric and slogans into the sanctuary during a moment of silence for a recently deceased congregant. The minister leading the service that day told the protesters that if they could be respectful, they were welcome to stay. But if they continued to disrupt the service, they would have to move their protest outside of the building. Most of the protesters continued to shout and harass, and during all of this, the youth of the congregation, many of whom were visiting that day from other parts of the country for a social justice seminar in New Orleans, formed a circle around the sanctuary and began to sing. They led the congregation in singing "Circle Round for Freedom." Joining hands and voices together, they reclaimed the sanctuary from those who would make it a place of fear and intimidation. They didn't flee. They didn't return hateful shouting with hateful shouting. The congregation responded to trouble quickly, firmly, and with love. This congregation exemplified our faith at our best. And out of this traumatic incident, some good has arisen. An interfaith coalition from around New Orleans held a vigil in support of religious freedom. Churches with seemingly little in common with the Unitarian Universalist Church spoke out against this violation of a fundamental American right, the right to worship or not as we see fit. New bonds have been formed in the community because of this incident, and many people witness that Unitarians Universalists walk their talk. We are a people who walk towards trouble, but part of that walk is knowing what to do when we get there, because there are two traps we can fall into: the trap of impotence, thinking we are powerless, and the trap of arrogance, of thinking we know all the answers. The first trap, impotence, leads to inaction and paralysis. The problems are too big and we are too small. What difference can we possibly make? Down this road lies apathy and despair, feelings which can be dangerous if they're indulged. The second trap, arrogance, leads to unhelpful hero complexes and misguided attempts at fixing. Listen, we are a pretty neat bunch. And there's an impressive amount of talent, I'm sure, in this room. In our daily lives, I bet a lot of us are pretty good at problem solving. And that's really wonderful. The world needs our dedication and creativity. But when it comes to problems this massive, this systemic, as the ones we're facing now, we aren't going to swoop in, fix it, and be done with it. If it were that easy, we'd have done it already. The theologian Rebecca Ann Parker says that creating a just world requires three things. One, truth-telling. We must tell our stories and listen to the stories of others. When we are entering another community, especially a community of historically oppressed people, the emphasis here is on listening. Two, salvaging. She writes, we must sift through the rubble and determine what needs to be saved. We must become good stewards of history and tradition. In the mix of beauty and injustice that marks any religious tradition, we must judge what gives life and what oppresses. Number three, choosing our guides. She goes on to write, we must turn to those who have survived grief, victimization, denial, and paralysis. We must look to the witness of those who have found ways to live lives of dignity, honesty, creativity, and activism. And we must take counsel from survivors, resistors, and truth tellers. Truth telling, salvaging, choosing our guides. Another way to phrase this would be learn, rethink, teach. Sister Simone concluded her lecture at General Assembly with a similar call to action. She said, if we're going to move towards trouble, then we need to find a way to do this side by side, where we look at the problem together, where we try to define the problem with everyone's story. And if everyone's story is in the mix, then we're halfway to solving that problem, because then we can see where the commonalities are. Then we can see who's left out. Then we can invite more people in. But we have to fight for this vision, for this possibility, for this new way forward. She goes on to say, what you need to do is this. Talk to folks you don't know about stuff that matters. Not just the World Cup or baseball or football. We have to begin talking again about the important issues. So what I do is this. This is Sister Simone talking. Standing in line at the grocery store, because I don't stand in line many places that often, I will say to the person behind me or in front of me, hey, have you thought about this effort to raise the minimum wage? What do you think? Or have you thought about immigration reform? What do you think? And what I've discovered is that people have thought about it, but nobody ever asks them, and they're quite surprised. But they have something important to say. If we're serious about walking towards trouble and opening our hearts and hearing a deeper story, we've got to have these conversations about serious stuff. We have to have these conversations about our values and about what really matters to us as a nation. We have to walk towards community. We are called to do this as people of this faith. We are called to tell our truth and to heed the truth of others. We are called to salvage what is good and dismantle what is harmful. We are called to seek out wise guides for this work. We are called to learn, rethink, and teach. We will each bring different gifts to this work. We must discern what they are and put them to good use. Because, as the saying goes, no one can do everything, but everyone can do something. And this is all hands on deck, folks. If you are a bridge builder who can listen deeply and provide new avenues for communication, we need you now. If you are an advocate who can speak truth to power and give voice to the voiceless, we need you now. If you are a healer who can offer comfort to the abused and the endangered, we need you now. If you are a protector who can stand up to hate speech, bullies, and other methods of intimidation, we need you now. If you are an innovator who can see new solutions and strategies, large and small, for the challenges before us, we need you now. If you're an artist who can create new ways of telling our stories, of bringing truth and beauty into our consciousness, we need you now. If you're a nurturer who can rekindle the flame of hope when it seems light is growing dim, we need you now. We need all of us now, giving the gifts we have to offer. We have to walk towards trouble. We have to walk towards community. And fortunately, they both lie in the same direction. We will stumble along the way. We have before and we will again. But we do not stand, we move. And the world desperately needs us to keep moving. Blessed be, and amen. Let us rise once more in body or in spirit and sing together hymn number 169, We Shall Overcome. world is too beautiful to be praised by only one voice. May you have the courage to sing your part. The world is too broken to be healed by only one set of hands. May you have the courage to use your gifts. Go in peace. Blessed be, and amen.
Life lays its task before.